Stop talking and thinking, and there is nothing you will not be able to know. Most of you are probably familiar with that line from the Zen poem, the Verses on a Faith Mind by the third Zen patriarch. That's usually my cop-out line when I'm scheduled to give a talk, and I explain why I'm not going to talk very much because of those very insightful lines. That teaching, of course, has given us in many forms, not only in the Sing Sing Ming. But when Angie called me late Friday night to explain that she somehow got double scheduled for today and was supposed to be at the Insight Meditation Center and here both at the same time, and she's a fantastic person, but not quite able to be in two places at once. I knew when I accepted her her kind offer to sit in for her here that I wouldn't be able to really sit in for her and not talk, because that's what she was coming here to do. So so when I have to talk about something other than not talking, I sort of look back at in the last few days of my life and say, well, where did the Dharma come to me? What's been going on? What caught my attention? And of course, everything going on is a teaching for us. And but what popped into my mind probably sometime yesterday morning was a reading at Bookshop Santa Cruz that I went to on Tuesday night. It was a reading by Sarah Juniper Rabkin on her recent publication, What I Learned at Bug Camp. Some of you might know Sarah or her husband, Chuck Atkinson, whose first wife was Carolyn Atkinson, who's in the lineage and comes up here and teaches sometimes. So anyway, Sarah's certainly connected to Kobin, to the Sangha, through Chuck and Carolyn. And this was part of the ongoing community book group at Bookshop Santa Cruz. And after she read a few excerpts from her book, Sarah was asked, what was the most difficult, and it's a series of essays that gathered, many of them have been published elsewhere. Sarah's a nature writer, taught up at UCSC for many years, leads workshops near here and in other parts of the country as well, and has written extensively short essays. Many of them are gathered together here in this book. But when asked what was the most difficult one, she referred to the last one in the book, which she titled "Love and Dread on the Lifeboat." And it provoked some discussion in the full room there. It must have been up to 100 people gathered there in the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And people offering various opinions about the lifeboat. She refers to the lifeboat as a it's actually the name given by this couple, this friend of theirs who moved up to Oregon, I believed, from California, and basically prepared themselves for the apocalypse, prepared themselves for peak oil, and just were stockpiling everything and had this large piece of property with gates around it and big house, and fully prepared to be self-sufficient when the rest of the world wouldn't be. And they called their place the lifeboat. And so people shared their opinions about that approach to dealing with many of the problems that are seen and talked about in the world. Not only peak oil, but the difficulties with our government and the loss of civil liberties and genocides here and there and wars in various parts of the world and all the chaos we see. And so this lifeboat approach was one that she and Chuck experienced, because these people were friends of theirs and they went and spent some time with them. And then she presented in that chapter also another alternative, because she didn't feel good about that isolation approach to dealing with life's problems, with the world's problems, with current chaos. And she related on some different experience that she and Chuck had about how companionship, how working together rather than isolating yourself seemed to be a much better way to go. They're not quite sure how it all was going to work that way, but it just seemed like that approach, mutual support as opposed to everybody in the world, all the billions of us building our own lifeboats might survive. And so there was some discussion about, the floor was open to what other thoughts people might have. But at the same time, an hour was allotted for this book reading. And by the time we got to that part, there wasn't much time left. And I knew something didn't feel quite right to me about what had been said there so far, but I wasn't quite able to get it out, particularly in the time. And I knew what might open up if I went that direction. So I was quiet. And then Angie's call came, and I said, "Oh, maybe this is a chance for me to get out." And another part of the Angie connection to this is that a few years ago. And for a few years, a group of us had been meeting who had sat with Coben for a long time, going back to the 70s. Most of us lived in the Santa Cruz area. Some came from the Bay Area, from further away. And we would mostly we met at Carolyn Atkinson's house once a month. And while Coben was living in the area, he would come and sit with us, and then we would talk for a while. And then Coben moved to Colorado, and we would change meeting places. And I remember this one occasion when we met at Sarah and Chuck's house, and Angie was there, and Carolyn, and Ellen Richter, and a number of other old-timers. And Carolyn brought up, at this time, the big issue on the world scene was Iraq and our embargo of medical supplies to Iraq and what it was doing to the children of Iraq. And once again, discussion back and forth, what's the right thing to do in there. I remember something in there with some passion and saying, "Holy, this is, where is this? What is this? Where is this Iraq? Where is this embargo? Where are these children that are dying?" What we have is, right, we had our gathering right there in the living room of Chuck and Sarah's house. And what were our minds doing running off like this? And Angie jumped in and said, she said, "Peter, you're right. And this is on the most existential level. This is all we have is right here." And I talked with her after we broke up there, and we sort of were around having some tea. I talked with Angie, and I said, "Oh, was it okay? Is it okay to talk like that in the group like this? Is it okay? Bring that out, and whatever that is." And she said, "Well, be careful, talk about what our mind creates, we should talk about people who've sat, people who are sitting, people who've sat recently, people who maybe have just finished a few periods of Zazen. Don't just go into, for example, Bookshop Santa Cruz and talk about that there's no need for a lifeboat because, you know, what we have is right here sitting around these chairs in the bookshop. If that, we don't, might not even have that, of course. But just, you know, be cautious where you talk about where the problems really are, if there are problems. So that's what I wanted to share briefly this morning. We looked through the headlines in papers, or if we do. I personally don't subscribe to papers or TV or look through the internet, something other than how the Chicago Bulls did against Miami, because that's my real world. But we can create a lot of problems if we don't realize what our mind is doing. Once again, we sit shikantaze with the no gaining idea. We don't seek enlightenment. We don't seek to solve problems. But as we sit, things begin naturally to peel off. We sit in those thoughts about what's going on in the so-called outer world are seen just as that, as thoughts, as mind busyness. And we stay present by tuning into the Zazen posture, to our breath. And although we find some calm and peace by doing this, that's not why we do it. It comes along with it, and I think we can eventually find that we don't need the lifeboat. Whether it's in the form of a compound that's have all these provisions for years of self-sufficiency, or a small or large group of family, friends, sangha, we really have all we need. As we practice, and it's not only when we're sitting on the cushion in the traditional Zazen posture or any of the alternative Zazen postures, it's the shikantaza that follows us, that we bring with us everywhere, in every posture, in every position, in every moment. And the big thing that comes along with that, of course, is realize that every moment is only this moment. Another Angie connection in this regard is her introducing me to Dole and the power of now during Sesshin a few years back. I hadn't been familiar with him before, I got into his Power of Now, and my other bag, there's the New Earth. I've always been somewhat confused by all the talk and words that come along with the esoteric Zen sutras and writings and patriarchs and all. Totally sort of brought it much more simple for my simple mind, and I was really very grateful for Angie's for making that introduction. And there was one paragraph here that I thought was right on in terms of what I was trying to share with you this morning. And of course, he's quite eclectic, and Christian and Buddhist and Muslim. Mohammedism. Whatever. He brings it all together. And in this chapter called "Moving Deeply into the Now," he writes, "The whole essence of Zen consists in walking along the razor's edge of now, to be so utterly, so completely present that no problem, no suffering, nothing that is not who you are in your essence can survive in you. In the now, in the absence of time, all your problems dissolve. Suffering needs time. It cannot survive in the now." The great Zen master Rinzai, in order to take his students' attention away from time, would raise his finger and slowly ask, "What, at this moment, is lacking?" A powerful question that does not require an answer on the level of the mind. It is designed to take your attention deeply into the now. A similar question in the Zen tradition is this: if not now, when? And I remember saying that afternoon at Sarah's and Chuck's, when Carolyn brought up the starving children in Iraq, that there's certainly a place for engaged Buddhism. And if we're overcome, and many of us deservedly are, with the need to do something engaged, then go do it. You can get to the place where all these things you see in the news are. If you, do you want to go to Afghanistan? You want to go to Libya? If that's what you feel is your need to practice, you could practice there. Or you could stay on the cushion, or you could walk on Long Ridge and look at the ocean. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference. It's how we bring our mind to where we're at. And then let go of mind. Let go of mind. So I'll stop talking and thinking, as I started off a few minutes ago to say, and be very welcome to have your comments and suggestions and words of wisdom. So if you've so completely adapted to stop talking, stop thinking, and there's nothing you will not be able to know, maybe that means it's time for any announcements from Greg or Karen, and then maybe a quiet walk in this beautiful post-rainy day. We can be close enough to hear Michael's Tenzo bell from the kitchen and gather there. Yes?
I really like what you said at your dinner party.
I meant to add, I didn't, I got a bunch of cards here put up in the last few days, and so I'm glad I didn't really have, but then I forget some things I would have liked to have said. In the process, which was mostly just yesterday, of browsing around, one of the other things that I had read in the last few months was the April edition of the Santa Cruz Zen Center Sangha. I don't know if any of you are on that list or get it digitally. But Kokio, who will be here leading a sesshin together with Michael later this week, the head teacher there, gave a series of talks in February during the Parinirvana session that they held there. And I wasn't around to attend that, but they are online. And one of those talks was the feature story in the April edition of their paper. It's called the Sangha. And the mind-only school of Zen was the theme of that series of talks. And if nothing else, if you gather, have access to that April edition of the Sangha, or go online, all the talks are there, MP3 form. And get, if you want more of a dose of this, about, it's all mind only. Even you mind only. I'm just mind only. There's a half a dozen of Kokyo's very heavy in a sense. That's why I just sort of lean more towards Dolly than some of those esoteric Zen. But it's I know when I still get that in the mail. When I read it over several times. Very worthwhile reading. I mean, all the stuff is, if you want to get into it. But I pointed out once again, it was something that was in my recent history, as Angie called, and I said, what's been around in my life that's worth sharing? So Kokyo's February session talks for get on this subject. Well, I think the reason that the third Zen patriarch in that verses of a faith mind says, among many other profound statements, stop talking and thinking, and there is nothing you will not be able to know, that some things can't be talked about. And words, as Koban always said, words are lies. As soon as you say that first utterance, you're creating a duality. And so, I mean, when Angie says, this is all we've got, that's already, getting words involved. But then you try to go deeper using words and our minds, and it gets confusing. Just like that series of talks that I began to listen to of Kokyo regarding mind only, at least to my mind, it easily gets boggled. And so I have a chance to lead sesshins here, and it's there's no Dharma talks, no chanting, no service. It's try to make it as wordless as possible, because it's that stillness, the quietness, the silence, that where you begin to grasp that this is all we have. But if we sit here and try to talk about it, I think it takes us away from the nonverbal, non-mental answer. So I back out from going further into it. Otherwise, I think I'd be what are they called?
Belaboring.
I'd be what?
Belaboring.
No, in other words, somebody who doesn't walk their talk. Hypocrite, that's the word I was looking for. Right. Yes.
You also covered the instance where you brought up a point in a Sangha gathering.
Right. About I'm not going to say that this is going to help, but you talk about the past and future disappear. It's look at it as, we usually think of time as horizontal, and it really is vertical. Things stack up on each other now. It's all now, vertically.